Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. I am today joined by James Henderson, director of the Natural Gas Programme at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, to discuss his paper, Russian Energy Becoming a Global Force, that he's co-authored with Vitaly Yermakov. Jim, great to have you here.
Pleasure, as always, David.
Well, look, can we just, for the purposes of our listeners, perhaps start with a brief history of the LNG, Russian LNG, and specifically the role of Gazprom?
Yeah, so I mean, Gazprom historically has obviously been Russia's major pipeline company, and all its exports have been from West Siberia to Europe. And I think in the 1990s and early 2000s, it saw an opportunity, mainly because the US market, of course, was then looking like it was going to become a major importer of LNG. And Gazprom had a large field in the Barents Sea, Shtokman, which had the opportunity to sell gas via pipeline, but also by LNG. And therefore, it started to develop an LNG strategy. Shtokman, as we know, kind of came and went. But Gazprom's plans then moved to the Baltic. It had a plan to develop a Baltic LNG plant, taking pipeline gas, liquefying it and selling it.
And that didn't work either.
Atlantic markets. It didn't work initially, no. And then finally, it got LNG off the ground, thanks mainly to Shell and its Sakhalin Energy Partners, by taking a 50% share plus one share in Sakhalin 2 in the mid-2000s. And it now operates the Sakhalin 2 LNG operations, selling LNG into the Far East. But essentially, that's kind of as far as its LNG ambitions went. It had other plans to develop a plant in Vladivostok, taking gas from East Siberia or Sakhalin. That again failed. So I think one can summarize Gazprom's LNG strategy as one of hope, but not really delivering. So we now have it's one project. So essentially, we kind of got through the 2000s to the 2010s with Russia not really having a significant LNG strategy.
And then along comes Novatek.
So
what happened there?
So Novatek emerged initially cooperating with Gazprom. But then taking a share in the Yamal LNG, initially in cooperation with Gazprom, actually, but then discovering that essentially banks would not lend it money to develop an LNG project, which it then had to kind of have a complicated agency deal with Gazprom with. And so therefore, it persuaded the Russian government in tandem with Rosneft to introduce a law in December 2013 to liberalise LNG exports to an extent for specific projects, of which Yamal LNG was one. It then took FID on Yamal LNG, and as we now know, 4 years later, successfully brought the project to completion. And now, essentially, the first three trains are running almost at full capacity.
That in itself is quite remarkable, isn't it? Because they delivered it under an environment of sanctions, and a lot of people saying they wouldn't be able to do it in a very hospitable environment.
Indeed. I mean, Novatek was sanctioned by the US, so couldn't raise finance in the West. Technology was not sanctioned, which helped because they were using Air Products, liquefaction technology, and you know, that went ahead. But no, it was remarkable. I mean, I think, you know, in the global energy industry, very few projects, as we know, in the past two decades have come in on time, on budget. And Novatek's project did that with the help of Total. And of course, interestingly, we'll talk about this a bit later, with the help of the Chinese.
Absolutely right. And I think we'll also talk about the role of infrastructure investments by the government a bit later as well.
Yeah,
I think it's important. The third company, of course, which we must just mention, is Rosneft. So where do they sit in the game?
So Rosneft were part of the push to liberalise LNG exports. They had, post-privatisation back in the mid-2000s, they have always had a gas strategy. They have challenged Gazprom domestically, and they had ambition to export gas. And they have a project in Sakhalin, Sakhalin 1, which has spare gas. There's been a huge debate of whether that gas should be sold to Gazprom or developed alone. In tandem with Exxon, they have developed the Far East LNG, which has had a bit of a roller coaster ride. It was initially announced with a great fanfare, then it kind of went into abeyance as they negotiated with Gazprom, and now it's come back again. And they're now promising a 6.2 million ton project by the mid 2020s. Yeah. We'll see whether it comes to fruition. Yeah. They have the ambition, at least, to export gas.
So let's kind of stand back and say, how do all these three companies work together? You know, because, you know, are they going to operate in parallel? Are they going to split LNG apart and exports? You know, who's going to be the dominant player? You know, is it managed competition, or is it kind of, are they competing really? How does that work together?
I think what is emerging is that Russia as a whole is developing a broader gas export strategy.
Right.
It's clear that pipelines are linked to difficult markets for Gazprom. Europe, as we know, with the Ukraine situation, with sanctions, with question marks over Nord Stream 2 and Turk Stream, it's Ukraine transit, of course.
Yep.
It's very clear that pipelines and difficult politics are close bedfellows as far as Europe is concerned.
Yep.
And Russia has understood that the gas market is globalizing. It needs to be involved if it's going to become a major player in the LNG market and going to maintain its role as a dominant global player. And therefore, it needs an LNG as well as a pipeline export strategy. As we talked about, Gazprom didn't really fulfill the role of a major LNG exporter and
Could it? Is it going to sit back and let Novatek take that role? Or is it going to lobby and then ultimately have its own export projects targeting Europe?
I think, of course, as we all know, that Gazprom and the Kremlin are closely tied.
Mm-hmm.
I think it appears to be the case that Novatek has demonstrated its ability and has received significant government support to develop LNG.
Mm-hmm.
It has done one job very well. It has now promised, you know, two or three more.
Absolutely.
And appears to have significant support from the Kremlin for that.
Mm-hmm.
Gazprom has a couple of projects that it wants to do, but I think there's a level of cynicism about whether they can achieve those projects.
Yeah.
So I think we are seeing a gradual emergence of a pipeline strategy run by Gazprom and an LNG strategy run by Novatek. That doesn't mean nobody else does LNG.
No.
It just means that Novatek is, if you like, the LNG champion, and other companies are doing less important projects kind of around the side, because if not, Russia is to meet its global LNG targets, and they are very significant targets, Novatek will be definitely in the forefront.
And of course, people, we just talked about Rosneft, but Rosneft's one of the ones at the side coming in.
Yeah, Rosneft's role in the Russian energy strategy is as clearly the major oil producer. Mm-hmm. Gas is an ancillary product for Rosneft. It's never going to be a major part of its portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
Its role is to maintain Russian oil production. So these roles, you know, one can't compartmentalize them totally.
Mm-hmm.
Gazprom will do some LNG, Rosneft will do some gas, but as far as LNG as a major role, that is Novatek's job.
And Novatek, of course, is very public now on its planned Kamchatka Peninsula regasification, or bridging facility.
Yeah.
You know, is that important part that goes with the northern route, such that they have direct access into the market?
Yeah, and I think it links Novatek's LNG with the Asian market, which is clearly vital. I think that transshipment point in Kamchatka is an important part of the strategy. It clearly is allied to the Northern Sea Route, which, as a geopolitical as well as a commercial trading route, is very important. It explains a little bit why the Kremlin are supporting Novatek with their Arctic ambitions, because they want to open that Northern Sea Route.
Mm-hmm.
It also explains, by the way, why the Chinese are so interested in Arctic LNG, because they also want part of the Northern Sea Route.
Yeah.
So I think the Kamchatka is part of that strategy, and it underlines the importance of Eastern markets and this great pivot to the East that Russia is undertaking. Yeah.
It can be very interesting to see how that plays out, actually, having that facility, the closest potential LNG supply point to Asia, actually operating.
So. Yes, I think that's right. And I think at the moment it is literally a transshipment point, so there's not much room for storage right now.
Mm.
If they developed storage and therefore had the ability to trade actively out of what they see as a potential hub, then I think that could be an interesting story, whether it would become a hub. And, you know, a pricing point is a different matter. But having LNG in storage available for trading in a volatile market would be an interesting story.
Well, look, let's just step back to kind of Russia's kind of higher level export strategy. You know, you say that LNG now is a key part of that strategy. So what are Russia's corporate and political LNG aspirations, let's say, over the next couple of years, next 2 years?
Well, over the next 2 years, clearly it's rather set in stone. Yeah. But I think longer term, it's quite clear that LNG is becoming going to have a much bigger role because Russia understands it needs to be much more flexible mm-hmm. in where it sells its gas. I think we're going to talk about Power-Siberia later, yes, but obviously pipelines, it goes without saying, give you a fixed starting point and a fixed end point.
Yep, yep.
Whereas LNG allows you access to markets that particularly Russia has not accessed before, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, obviously, but then also South America, parts of Europe they haven't been able to access. And so I think there's an element of commercial flexibility, but then strategically, of course, that gives you access to different levels of influence in different countries as countries start to import your LNG. And in terms of overall sales, Alexander Novak, the energy minister, stated recently that he anticipates Russian LNG reaching about 70 million tonnes by 2025 and 130 to 160 million tonnes by 2035.
Wow.
So okay. In 15 to 16 years' time. Now, those are stretched targets. I mean, the 70 implies Yamal LNG plus Arctic LNG 2 plus probably one other project in addition to Sakhalin 2 and maybe a regenerated Baltic LNG. So all that happening by 2025, that's a big ask.
Yeah.
And indeed, doubling that again by 2035 is another big ask. The resources are there.
Mm.
Will they be able to follow through with project management, finance, etc.? But whether those timings are right, certainly the level of LNG involvement is certainly potentially there. And Russia's always had an ambition to have 15% market share of global LNG supply. And I think, depending on where you see global LNG supply going, that would appear to be eminently achievable by 2030.
Yeah, in a 500 million tonne world, that's 75 million tonnes. So yeah.
Yeah, and as that expands, you get to a 750 million tonne world, suddenly you're at 110 million tonnes, and that's roughly where, Novatek and others see this going over the next 20 years.
But of course, also links into the growth of the LNG market itself, the role of gas in the energy transition.
Exactly.
We're not here to talk about that today. We talk about that in other podcasts, may I say, but not specifically today.
Yeah.
So, can I just to finish this off, where is the balance between pipeline and an LNG? Is there a specific percentage, do you think, split, or in the aspirations, the strategic aspirations of Russia? Or is it just they're going to let the projects play out?
Well, I think that it's interesting perhaps to look at the Asian strategy now. Obviously, we have Power of Siberia pipeline, which is going to start up in a month and a half's time in December.
Yep.
So clearly, pipelines are going to play a role. But again, there we see the strategic problem with pipelines is you've got one buyer.
Absolutely.
And China essentially is buying stranded gas from East Siberia, and it's very clear where the bargaining strength is. Clearly with the buyer. So Gazprom, in its traditional role, has built a very expensive $55 billion pipeline with processing to China, and will make a return on that, hopefully, as long as the price is not renegotiated.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you have Novatek and potentially Rosneft developing LNG projects for sale to the east with more flexibility. Clearly, China's still an important customer, but other optionality. And I think that is where the ambition lies, is to clearly have access to the east, but have the option to sell to multiple countries to be involved in the biggest expansion. I mean, as the IEA has demonstrated, gas trade going forward is going to be dominated by LNG.
Absolutely.
If you are a major gas producer and exporter, you have to be involved in that LNG trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Russia has just seen that. It's the Kremlin has seen that it has an operator in Novatek that to date at least has promised and delivered successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it is saying, right, do it again. And Novatek's ambitions are to grow to a 70 million ton LNG company by 2030. And it certainly has the resource base in the Arctic to do that. It is developing, very importantly, domestic technology so that it may become less reliant on imported liquefaction technology if it all works. And clearly, one big question remains financing.
Yes.
But again, that is where the links with China and potentially other Asian countries and Asian banks come in. So I think the ambition is strong. The resource base is undoubtedly there. I mean, Novatek alone has reserves.
Huge reserves.
On the Gdańsk Peninsula and the Yamal Peninsula, which can more than easily support the projects it has in the pipeline and more. And I therefore think the question is really whether they can continue to deliver operationally, mm-hmm. and whether Gazprom and Rosneft can come up with, other projects. They're not going to dominate LNG, but supporting projects, if you like.
Can I just take us back to the kind of, you did insinuation about the kind of the whole strategy, and that's talking about you, because we said that Russia has very clearly supported Novatek in the development of Yamal LNG project. It's no doubt it's been a success. There's no doubt about that. But I'm just wondering, then, is this a commercial strategy, or is it part of a wider geopolitical support that's being given by the Kremlin to Novatek, such that Russia is going to have a dominant energy supply position, and therefore it's going to be give them some sort of geopolitical advantage as a country? What is it, commercial or geopolitical support?
I mean, as with all questions like that, it's a bit of both. I mean, obviously there is a political, geopolitical motivation, both domestic and external. So domestically, the regional and economic development of the far north of Russia is a core strategy, and clearly these are in the far north, and it's not just the development in the Yamal and Gdan peninsulas, it's the development in Murmansk of the ports and the construction facilities, and potentially the construction of liquefaction technology, which would be a huge boost to the north.
We mustn't underestimate this, but they're planning to build these gravity-built structures, which are going to be actually house the liquefaction facilities and the storage in Murmansk, and then float them round to the Arctic too. This is a huge investment, isn't it, Murmansk? It's going to have major economic impact, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's going to be a huge economic impact. And if they can, in addition to that, develop the Arctic Cascade technology, which they're going to use for train four of Yamal, in 0.9 million tonnes.
Yeah.
If they can develop that to a slightly larger size, and they can use that for future projects, and they're promising to do it for the OB LNG project, which should happen on Novatek's timetable in the early to mid-2020s. If they can develop that technology as well, then you really have the foundation of a Russian domestic LNG business. So politically and domestically, that's important. Externally, it's about the Arctic and the Northern Sea Route.
Yeah.
Russia has a very clear Arctic strategy. It dominates the geography of the Arctic seas. It sees it as a key bargaining strength with both the US, the West, and actually I think also with China. China are very keen to get access to that. They have no access to the Northern Sea Route. Russia can provide that. And so I think that, and clearly there's a military angle here as well. There are lots and lots of ex-Soviet military bases that could be reopened, and having hydrocarbon infrastructure clearly supports the kind of whole shipping lane strategy geopolitically as well. So I think there are lots of reasons to support, but having said that, it's not just about politics. It has to work commercially. Tax breaks have been provided. Financial support for construction of ports has been provided to make these things work for Novatek and their shareholders financially as well. So as a result, the break-even price of LNG out of Yamal, on a full cost basis, I would estimate Yamal is about $6.50 to $7 an MMBTU. If Novatek are correct and the Arctic LNG costs can come down, you're talking a break-even price of around $6 an MMBTU. Because there's no tax.
And also
the upstream costs are very low.
Correct, exactly. And the number that Novatek always quotes about 50 cents, isn't it, for gas, which if we compare even against a 2 or 250 Henry Hub.
Yeah.
And of course, with the opening of the North Sea route, it's closer to the market.
Exactly.
So all these factors are making kind of lower cost LNG delivery.
Absolutely. So essentially, obviously the Russian government support via the tax, almost the free tax system, is helping the economics. So there obviously is a commercial argument. I think Novatek particularly, I'm sure the Russian government understand that this LNG has to be competitive, and both in Asia and in Europe, because obviously it has access to both markets, at least access to Asia for half the year at the moment. So therefore, there is a commercial line here which has to be supported, but there's a political backdrop as well, without a doubt.
It's interesting, the geopolitical backdrop, of course, is we want independence. So it's one whereby we are going to develop our own technology, as you've said, so that we are not going to be influenced politically by other countries, and we can develop our own exports. And if we have low cost LNG to the market, we will be able to have the geopolitical influence. So it's
I think it's not just that LNG provides geopolitical influence. I think the LNG market obviously is a little like the oil market, whereas there's less security of supply concern because of the increasing liquidity of the market. I think it's more Russia does not want to be reliant on its pipeline exports anymore,
yep,
because it's finding its pipeline exports are leading to political, or a part of political problem, yep, in Europe.
Yeah.
Clearly, the pipelines are being used as part of the political game, and I think they understand completely that having a pipeline to China, it comes with clear both commercial and political risk.
Well, let's just talk about that. We talked about the Europe a lot. Let's just focus a little bit on China for a minute. You know, the Power of Siberia pipeline you've referred to, it's going to open later in the year. How does this impact on Russian LNG strategy?
Well, I think it's part of the Russian more flexible export strategy. As I said, Gazprom builds its pipeline. Novatek, possibly Rosneft, build LNG facilities. Gazprom already has Sakhalin 2.
Yeah.
You have a combined strategy. I think the interesting thing about Power of Siberia is when you flip it around and think about how it impacts Chinese strategy.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, it is part of a compass of import solutions for China. It's the northern axis.
Yep.
You've got Central Asia in the west, Myanmar in the south, and then LNG in the onto the eastern seaboard. So the Chinese see it as part of their diversified source of supply. And of course, the Chinese are playing a very interesting game,
yeah,
with their contract with Gazprom, their relationship with Novatek around Russian LNG, and also their long-term relationship with Rosneft, traditionally over oil imports, but clearly they could be a buyer of any LNG that Rosneft produces on Sakhalin. And they also have a relationship with Rosneft via Beijing Gas to potentially buy pipeline imports from Rosneft as well, if that is ever allowed.
Right.
So I think there's an interesting negotiating game the Chinese are playing by almost playing the different Russian players off against each other. And so you can see that Chinese influence on Russian gas is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians are clearly very keen to sell gas to the fastest growing gas market in the world.
Right.
And then, of course, this is all part of a bigger game, geopolitical game, with the China obviously having a very poor trade relationship with the US right now. So, you know, US LNG is not attractive. Others are taking advantage. Of course, Russia is part of that game.
But China wants to diversify, won't it?
So
therefore, there will be, I imagine, a cap in their mind of the volume of imports they'll take from one specific country, such as Russia, be it by pipeline or be it by LNG.
Yes, and I think, obviously, classic Chinese strategy, they want to invest in the upstream that is supplying them.
Yeah.
Gazprom has never allowed them to do that.
Yeah.
Novatek, by contrast, has allowed them to do that. And therefore, you know, you would imagine they are likely to prefer Novatek LNG over perhaps more Russian pipeline gas, unless they can get access to the upstream. So it's an interesting balancing act.
Well, Jim, we're coming to the end of our podcast today, but I'd just like to end. I always like to end up with kind of, you know, how a question which asks, how is it going to end up, if you see what I mean? So I expect my question is, you know, will Russian LNG grow further to become a global force? You know, and which companies do you think will succeed in the Russian energy sector? Will it continue, for example, to be Novatek? And how will Russia balance its pipeline and energy aspirations? All the stuff we've talked over the last 20 minutes, you know, what's the end game?
So I think the end game is that Russia does become, by 2030, one of the big four exporters.
It's a 15% target of the business.
I think that's very realistic.
Yep.
I think you see, you know, obviously the US, Australia and Qatar as the current big three, and I think Russia can join them. Obviously, there are other producing areas like East Africa, but I think Russia can become a major force.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gazprom can probably develop some LNG projects. They may do a renewed Baltic LNG project. They may do a small project in Vladivostok.
Right.
But the Baltic could be 13 million tons, but I mean,
okay, yeah.
But I think it's in terms of Gazprom scale, it's still pretty marginal.
Yeah.
Gazprom remain the major pipeline exporter and probably do not see their monopoly broken.
Mm.
By contrast, I think you do see Novatek encouraged to grow rapidly. I mean, they have they've taken an FID on Arctic LNG 2, they have the Obskar project. They have Arctic LNG 1, and they have enough reserves for Arctic LNG 3, possibly 4, as you expand the gravity-based system. It'll be market-related, how fast they go ahead. It'll be finance-related. But their record to date suggests that, and their resource base suggests that they certainly can do this over time. Whether at 2030 is exactly the date, I don't know. But I think you do see the emergence of Novatek as a major Russian LNG champion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Rosneft, it will remain a relatively peripheral part of their portfolio. We will see whether Far East LNG really goes ahead. I mean, it certainly appears to be more serious now than it was a year ago.
Yep.
And Exxon appear to be bought into the project.
Right.
So we may see that emerge by 2025.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Rosneft has dramatic further LNG plans. And it could expand Far East LNG, but it doesn't have a lot of other projects in its portfolio. So I think in terms of LNG, Gazprom and Rosneft remain fairly marginal. Novatek is the champion. Mm. By contrast, Gazprom remains very much the pipeline export champion.
Yeah.
And overall, Russia develops a much more diversified portfolio. It has pipelines to the west, which continue to dominate export sales, will always be a major part of their export sales, but with the political difficulties we all know about.
Yeah.
They have an emerging strategy in the east with one pipeline, possibly a second, but during the 2020s.
Yeah.
And then from a Russian perspective, you have the LNG business developing to give you added flexibility, access to new markets, geopolitical bargaining power in the Northern Sea route as it opens up, and a much greater ability to compete as a gas superpower ought to in a world that is becoming increasingly LNG dominated in terms of trading.
Well, I think that was an extremely good summary and vision, and certainly, you know, Jim, thank you very much for your time today. You know, I really, as always, enjoyed our conversation. Builds on your and Vitaly's paper, Russian LNG Becoming a Global Force, that can be found at our website, www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers which we've published by the Institute. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast today, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.